Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each
other. What I have in my head to the outside world.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with
Whatever
others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Welcome to Speak Science, episode 44. Joining me out in Philadelphia, Michael McLeod.
What's up, buddy?
And with a brand new speech science baby, Michelle Wintering.
Hey, everybody.
And of course, I'm Matt Hott here in lovely, rainy Cincinnati, Ohio, where in the past week, my temperatures have ranged, no joke, from 65 degrees to 98 degrees. And I found out my air conditioner didn't work and had to refill it. That's how my week's been going. Michelle, we'll start with you because yours seems to be the easiest, right?
Yeah, baby speech science was born on the 4th of July.
What, was it really? 4th of July,
yeah,
baby?
Yep, 4th of July, baby.
That is awesome!
Yep, apparently that's when he wanted to arrive.
Like a firework.
Yep, don't show...
Our plan is to tell him the fireworks are for him every year.
Aww.
It's going to be an easy little birthday celebration.
Look, yeah, that's perfect.
Fireworks are for you.
Just don't show him the Tom Cruise movie until he's like 17 or 18.
Oh, yeah.
Born on the 4th of July. I don't think that's kid friendly for anyone. I'm not even sure that's adult
friendly. We'll hold off on that for a while.
Well, congratulations. Are baby and mom doing well?
We are. So classically sleep deprived like most new moms, but baby's doing great.
It's not sleep deprivation. It's just torture training from a master. Just remember that.
Yeah, he's actually pretty good.
That's because he's like 3 weeks old. Wait till he gets exactly. To a year.
Hey, I got time. I got to enjoy it right now.
Good luck.
He can't talk yet. So.
Michael, can you beat that? How's your week been?
I don't think I know if I can beat that, but I can certainly try.
Go for it.
So last week I was, I spent the majority of my week down in Maryland with the amazing Focus Foundation, working with those families down there. That was a really amazing experience. I documented a lot of it on my my social media accounts, my Grow Now Therapy accounts. You can check that out if you want to see, you know, what we do with the amazing Focus Foundation. You can Google them and get more information on them, on some rare disorders they treat. And that was great. Did a lot of great networking, met some amazing people who, you know, work in the, you know, the same little niches that I work in. And, it was great. It was a really, really overall amazing experience.
That is so cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
A baby being born, Michael making the world better. And I just added Fluent to my air conditioning and went to an anime convention and worked. We're changing the world, the three of us, aren't we? You guys are. I'm holding us down here in reality, or I guess behind in reality. But any exciting things happening in therapy this week? I've got new avows coming out the wahoo, but that's about it. Anything? I know Michelle, you're kind of out on therapy. Michael,
I'm partnering with a local special needs private school to work on the executive function model I developed. We're really doing some efficacy trials and some research on that. So that's a pretty exciting thing.
So you just glossed over it. You developed a new executive functioning model?
Yes.
So you just flip that right.
You're just like, I had some oatmeal, created a thing that might change the world, and then had some snacks. So what is this? If you can, are you able to talk about it?
Yeah, it's basically a very specific model. Basically it could be used in a school as an overall, you know, curriculum or, you know, treatment model. And it also works within a one-on-one treatment, as in, you know, speech therapy or executive function coaching. So it's something that's pretty applicable. It's, you know, based on a lot of the most up-to-date research, a lot of the research from, the Harvard Center of the Developing Child, and, you know, a lot of the really great up-to-date work And yeah, so we'll be doing some research on that, and hopefully have everything published, you know, hopefully probably around a year from now.
Nice.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
So I'm an idiot when it comes to this stuff, and I struggle sometimes when I'm in my school district to even come up with ideas. So do you like, so you've created like a, were you part of a team when you created this? Or was it just
I worked with a partner of mine, Michelle, okay. And we based on our own specific clinical experiences, a lot of the most up-to-date research, really just, combining things into, you know, how it could be used in a school or how it could be used in a therapy session, and really, having very specific programming, very specific, activities, different mindsets that are used, to really, target each individual executive function, as well as tailoring it to the individual student.
And then I apologize for more questions, but like, so then do you like practice it in your clinic and then go, oh my gosh, we need to do more research? Or was it, we do the research first? How did you guys do that?
Yeah, it's pretty much, the way I've been doing therapy now for quite some time, especially with my executive function students. The middle school aged, high school age students, whether they have problems with organization, problems initiating, problems with self-control, whatever it be, based on the individual. And, I take a very specific, innovative approach, because a lot of these students I get, have already been through the ringer of therapies. They've been through speech therapists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, psychotherapists, you name it, they've been there. So really, a lot of parents come to me looking for something new and something different. So really, this specific program and this therapy is something that I've, technically been doing, and I've kind of just, put pen to paper, written it down, applied the research, and taking it to the next step.
That is really cool.
Thank you.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's good stuff.
Well, we will be, reading that article in about a year now? We'll discuss that here on Speech Science.
I would assume so. I would assume so. So far, all the paperwork is taking about a year. So it's we'll see how long it takes to get everything out there.
Oh, man, that's awesome. That is so cool.
Hopefully it works.
Changing the world, Mike.
Look at that. Nonprofit groups, therapy techniques. This should be the Michael McLeod show, not
Matt.
I was not fixing air conditionings and going to animation. I got a long way to go, man.
Yeah, me. I took people's money and scanned tickets all weekend. That is the extent of that one.
Sounds good.
Someone's
got to
do it.
Let's go on with the show. Coming up today, we're going to talk about what do you do, where do you send someone with severe autism. Also, what is going on in nursing homes that maybe you might want to know about? And lastly, we're still going to talk about the 8 million straws in the ocean, but how is it related to speech science? We'll find out right after the break.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're going to go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls?
the ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. You don't know go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Speech Science, episode 44. I'm Matt Hott, joined by number of children, Michelle Wintering, and then Michael McLeod.
The number of children that we have. Got
yeah.
it.
So, okay. that's what I meant. Like, I've got two, you've got one, Michael, you've got none, right?
That's right.
Perfect. See, it made sense. We can count. We're like Sesame Street. Oh, okay. So this first article comes out of the Chicago Tribune. It's titled, Young People with Severe Autism Have Nowhere to Go. How much experience do you guys have with the severe autism population? I have very little experience.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, before I became a speech therapist, actually while I was taking the like prerequisite courses to go into grad school, I was working at something called an RTF, which is a residential treatment facility.
Okay.
Like a huge campus where kids live full-time on campus because they are so severe. And there's a school on campus and everything. Like they're, you know, basically too disabled to live at home with their families. And this was something that was always really discussed. You know, like there was a certain age where they quote unquote aged out of the RTF. And once that age is hit, where do they go? What do they do? And this, you know, this is something that I continually read about here and there, and I have yet to hear any specific solutions or what's going out there. I remember I went to the DIR conference a few years ago, and they had a young blind girl who with autism, who was amazing at piano. She was playing piano there. I'd have to find her name. She has a YouTube. She has a Facebook page. And she was there to speak about, you know, the conditions for these people. You know, they're working in, you know, warehouses making 75 cents an hour. It's like the worst possible working conditions. It's terrible. And this article really just kind of harped on those points.
Michelle, do you have any experience with the severe autism?
So my experience comes more from the therapy camp that I've talked to you guys about before. So one summer in particular, a couple summers ago, I was on the severe behavior team. So we had four kids in our group for the whole week for camp. So it's a day camp, but they actually stay with their families on the campus as well. So we have them during the day. And we had teenage boys with severe autism, two of whom were nonverbal, which goes with what we often see as communication people, that the severe behaviors often come from our young people who aren't able to communicate verbally or in another way. Because what's 100% effective and works every single time and is self-reinforcing is if someone's in my space and I punch them, they get out of my space. And so that's my experience, was in the more of a camp therapy setting, and we worked with OT, behavior, an ABA, a special ed teacher, a speech pathologist, and I'm trying to remember the other specialists on the team, but the same discussion, kind of like Michael mentioned, that mm-hmm. even in the camp setting, they have camps. The idea of that camp in particular is there actually is a transition from a therapy camp to, when they get past about high school, they go to the actual, just a normal camp. They come those same weeks, but they're there for an adventure camp.
Oh, and, cool.
Our kids with severe autism aren't candidates for a typical adventure camp. They're never able to graduate from, in that sense, kind of like Mike said, there's not an option for them to continue in that sort of setting. So we had put together this severe behavior team with a group of therapists ready to work with them. But it was, and even the family said, we realized that this isn't an option for them long term, you know, to keep coming back to this camp without those supports in place.
My only experience with severe autism is usually I'm at the high school level. So by the time they come to the high school, they're either they have behaviors under control or they're here for about a year and then we start looking for alternative placements that might suit them a little bit better. But what really shocked me was the couple of the stories in here. One was the one student, I think it was in California, that he was at the hospital, his wrists and ankles were strapped to an ER bed for the first week. And then they had to have a locked door with like a sliding tray or sliding panel that they could put his food tray in because the staff, the mom thought was afraid of their son. And then the other one was Ben, the teenage son, who when we say teenage son or young child or, you know, young man, 6'1", 240 pounds, spent 304 days in an ER. What was that, a psychiatric ER before being moved to a better facility? And I'm guessing they're not getting a whole lot of services in these areas.
So far, pretty much from the article, it seems like the only thing they're really working on is de-escalating behaviors. You know, there's no coping strategies taught. There's no actual therapy like we're used to providing. You know, this article really just, you know, rung a bell with me with, you know, a lot of these teenagers I work with, you know, with IEPs in the school districts. You know, IEPs do have that, you know, that, you know, they are mandated to have transition goals into, you know, post IEP, but after that, there's absolutely nothing. You know, I've heard some people say to me, like, it's almost better to have a Down syndrome diagnosis as after 18 than it is to have an autism diagnosis. I'm not quite sure how truthful that is.
I can believe that.
Yeah, but
what's the reasoning on that? Sorry.
I think it was there's more services. I think it was it's easier to get care. It's easier to get help. Because once those IEP services end, you know, what is there? What is there to aid these families? What is there, you know, in terms of gaining employment, in terms of transition into adulthood? What do families have?
And even, I hate to say this, but like, even from a physical standpoint, if you have someone that has the diagnosis of Down syndrome, there's a lot of physical characteristics that if something is going wrong in the situation, the majority of the population could look at someone and say, okay, let me see what I can do to help, or can I de-escalate the situation? When you've got a student or a man or a young woman with autism and they're having a moment because of a sensory input, it doesn't look that different than someone just having a really bad day or being angry or being short, and it can really escalate the situation. So I could kind of see how, you know, saying a Down syndrome diagnosis would be better off in the adult world, just from the outside person point of view.
Yeah, I've heard this be referred to before as, you know, as referred to as an avalanche, you know, an avalanche of young adults with autism, you know, graduating high school and just being thrust out into the workforce and, you know, families being completely stuck. I believe, I think it was Dateline or somebody did some sort of a special on this, I think a few years back. And they pretty much followed families of kids with autism. And, you know, I remember one mom had to quit her job and stay home full time. And it's tough. There's really nothing out there. The only thing I can really think of off the top of my head is the John Stewart Night of Too Many Stars.
Yeah.
When he tries to raise the money. I remember there was like a horseback riding thing he was raising money for and other ways for young adults to gain employment. I think that's obviously an incredible thing, but that's not the only thing. You know, there has to be something else out there, because hospitalizing them, you know, in this article alone, it talks about one boy who was strapped to a bed for an entire week and, you know, being put in rooms for a week. And like you said before, there's no therapy being provided. It's just wait until you're calm and then go back home where you also get no services. So
Pennsylvania State University, this is from the article, found ages 12 to 21 with autism are four times more likely to go to the emergency room than peers without autism, and then are 3.5 times more likely to be admitted to the hospital floor, and at which point they stay in the hospital nearly 30% longer. If you've never taken a child into the ER, it is almost impossible to get your child admitted for the most part, because what they want to do is they want to treat them. So to hear that it's four times likelier to get admitted, and then you're 30% likely to stay longer, or stay 30% longer, it's
good night, Michael. Awesome.
Thank you. Have a good night, buddy. Okay, I'll be up in a little bit. I'm going to keep that in the show. My son just told me he's going to bed. But it's almost it's not impossible to get your child admitted, but it's hard because the ERs don't want to admit them to the floor, because if it can be serviced at home. But you're right, Michael. It's keeping them calm is probably what's pushing them to the admission floor.
Yeah, the article mentioned one boy who was able to make it to Baltimore's Kennedy Krieger Institute, which is, you know, the best of the best, you know, a private, highly regarded facility that offers intensive therapy, psychiatry, and family coaching. You know, Kennedy Krieger is known nationwide. That's the best of the best. So that family clearly lucked out, but obviously there's probably thousands of others who aren't even close to that.
No, not at all.
And also, they mentioned in the article just the sheer number of beds that are available in facilities that aren't going to be at the Kennedy Krieger level even, but just any treatment facility beyond a hospital that's actually set up to take care of someone in that sort of situation.
You know, there's a need, and I will say, though, that I know where my boundaries are. And when it comes to severe autism in the schools, I don't have the training, and I don't have the staff or the team that I can even – look to build, and that's not a slight on my team. That is more just that they don't have the experience. They don't have, you know, we go through CPI training, and that's kind of a joke. I mean, I it's more of how to de-escalate a situation. But if you've got a student with severe autism that is in the middle of a meltdown, right now what we do is we usually just kind of make sure they're not going to hurt themselves or anybody else. So then, I hate to say it, but sometimes we'll call their parent if we can't get them to calm back down, because we don't know what else to do at that point. They've been screaming for 3 hours. Maybe it's time to go home for the day, because we don't want them to get hurt, and now they're making themselves physically sick by screaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you're right, Matt, that the CPI training is de-escalation training.
Yeah.
For the vast majority of staff, unless you're on the restraint team or on, you know, some other where you're getting a little bit more training, but even then is not like true behavior training. And so I remember that from CPI training in the schools, of you're learning the stance and you're learning the positioning for yourself to keep yourself safe, to keep the student safe, to keep the other student safe, to remove them from the situation. And that's really it.
Well, we would love to continue this, but we want to hear what you have to say. So please head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us, contact@speechscience.org, or give us a phone call, 503-345-6740. You know what? I almost forgot to even say, if you want to hashtag us, go on to #speechscience, and on there that shows up on our podcast.speechscience.org page. And right now it looks like some talk about SGDs and bedside devices, and a voice identification computer program from the 1979s. I don't know if #speechscience has also gotten tagged by old school technology, but I guess so. You guys just look at me as I throw out the hashtags and got nothing. All right, let's transition then. One's coming out.
I'm sorry.
Hey, man, it's all good. All right, coming out of PBS, I guess not coming out of, reported by PBS, most nursing homes are not adequately staffed, new federal data says. I'm not even surprised. I read through this article. I'm not even surprised. Like, I immediately go back to my day. Was working up near a nursing home near Kenwood Mall here in Cincinnati. And I won't say which nursing home it was, but the patient looked at me and said, "Can you go get the aide? I need to go use the restroom." So I was like, on it, went down the hall, got or went and grabbed the aide, and her response was, I've got 100 people I got to go help change before I can get down to Mr. So-and-so. He's got a diaper. He'll be fine.
Oh.
So I reported that, you know, and did everything I had to on my side. But I'm not even surprised by this article. They're, you know, what is it? 14,000 nursing homes submitting payroll records, 7 in 10 had lower staffing. I'm not even surprised. They don't pay enough for what they need. You, if you don't pay well enough, you get not necessarily people that are 100% gung-ho, and then that creates a negative cultural environment of business, and then you lose your good people to nursing homes that do pay well.
I had the same reaction you did, Matt, honestly, when we had this on our article list and I looked at the title. I didn't even read it yet, and I went, man, I'm not surprised. and that's from limited experience that I have in everything from nursing home PRN to home healthcare PRN. I think it's the same sort of thing. Like, people are short-staffed, and it's not one thing they said was, they said on weekends it's a ghost town, and I totally agree with that, because yep. If you're in person, I would go in on weekends, and finding anyone just to get Jell-O and, you know, applesauce from the dining facility was hard. So I don't know. I'm not surprised.
So already in the very short amount of time we've been discussing these articles, we've already touched on the population that we serve, two very crucial populations, you know, the young adults, you know, transferring out of high school, as well as the population in nursing homes, and two incredibly terrible things that are happening mm-hmm. right now to these populations, and not a single solution in sight.
Well, and I think that's the problem, is that like a solution, like an either solution for either children or young adults with autism, or, you know, the elderly in the nursing home, it all comes down to finances and money. And if you have an elderly gentleman, for example, an elderly man, he's wheelchair, dementia bound, can't make any progress on physical therapy, can't make any progress on OT. Speech comes in every now and then just to serve him for 6 weeks to make sure dysphagia is not increasing or decreasing, or maybe working a little bit on orientation here and there. There's not a whole lot of finances coming into the facility. So then they determine that it all comes down to money. And I'm sorry, my analogy kind of went squirrely there for a second, but there's some really nice nursing homes here in the Cincinnati area that I would recommend to a person in a heartbeat. And then there are some that I go to that I said, I would rather care for my terminally ill parents, who are not terminally ill, but if they were, I'd rather care for them on my back porch and put up a tent and know that they would get better service than some of the nursing homes around here.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. It comes down to the finances. If there were finances to promote, you know, programs for young adults with special needs, you know, after high school, those programs would be there. And if there was more funding in these SNFs to work with these patients, you know, this program, this article mentioned that the staff is being burned out and they quit and it's so short-staffed on the weekend. Things would be better if there was more funding. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. And early in the article, they even said on-duty personnel cared for nearly twice as many residents as they did when the staffing roster was fullest. So no wonder they're burnt out. I mean, you're taking care of people who some are 100% dependent on that.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a facility that I've worked in recently, and this is a facility that I would say tries their best. Like, they have a great staff. Yeah. The problem is there's not enough of their staff, and they've got an aide for a hallway of, I would say, 8 adults, and they've all got like their own little apartments. But that one aide, if she's helping, you know, Mrs. Smith to the restroom and Mrs. Jones falls and hits her button, does she leave Mrs. Smith, who's a fall risk, on the toilet?
Mm-hmm.
Does she, you know, leave Mrs. Jones laying on the side of the floor while she's hitting her button? And then you've also got Mr. Henry or whoever, I'm trying to think of other nondescript names, hitting his button because he needs help getting dressed. I mean, this is a real scenario that I'm thinking of just recently in a facility I was in probably 2 or 3 months ago. So this article means, I mean, I'm not surprised by any of it, unfortunately.
The one quote from this article that really stood out to me was, almost every problem we've had is one that could have been alleviated with enough and well-trained staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you know these students from SLP grad school, it's pretty clear the training is there. You know, they are very, these are very intelligent, highly trained people, but in terms of finances, in terms of how many people the SNF can staff on a weekend or a particular day, is there enough staff there to do what needs to be done to care for each individual patient? It's a really difficult thing.
They said the average pay per hour was $13.23 for a nurse assistant. You know, you're looking at $530 before taxes for a pay for someone who's in charge of the well-being of your grandma or grandpa or whoever. And yeah. You know what? You're right. There is burnout. There is that I'm tired of getting poop on me. I'm tired of having an older person yell at me or curse at me or hit me with their cane, or I have to change another soiled bed sheet at $13 an hour.
And you got to remember that's an average, which means people are well under $10 an hour in that position in certain facilities.
And they're not even doing it for one person. They're doing it all day, every day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I some of the nurse aides that I've worked with or nurse assistants are some of the most awesome, funny, nicest, kindest hearted people I've ever met, because they're in there every day. They're doing their best to make sure that the World War II vet that doesn't remember that he didn't just come home from the war, but he's been home for 80 years. They're doing their best to make him feel safe and comfortable. And then they have to go down the hall and stop the two elderly citizens from hooking up because they also don't realize that they're in their 90s. But you know, when they're only getting paid $13 an hour, that goodwill only lasts so long till they say, see ya, I gotta go.
Yep.
I think just about every SLP at this point has heard at least one horror story about an SNF. You know, it's mm-hmm. becoming pretty commonplace now on these, you know, speech pathologists at large or whatever it is. So it's this problem is not going away. Productivity standards are there, low staffing is there, low funding is there. Funding's being cut. So in terms of our audience here at Speech Science, you know, which is made up of mostly SLPs, what can we do besides vote?
I would say keep voting and keep pounding the drum. I mean, the only way that we can make a difference is to make sure that it's being heard. I know here in Ohio, we have GAC, Government Advocacy Coalition events, where we go and meet with the senators and the what are they? The other senators and reps, representatives for the state of Ohio. And we tell them what we need and what our families need. And the reps will listen to us, but they need to know that it's not just 10 of us. They need to know that there's thousands of us. There's 10,000s of us in Ohio, you know, and I'm guessing it's the same thing Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or wherever you're at now, Michelle.
Currently in Texas.
I mean, other than that, unless you're winning the lottery and opening up a facility, I mean, we just have to keep fighting to keep those numbers low.
Just pay very close attention to who
or your vote
is pushing to make cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. There's so many things. There's so many platforms that politicians run on. Just pay very, as SLPs, as the SLP community out there, pay very, very close attention to who is pushing and who is trying to save a penny of the federal budget by pushing for Medicare and Medicaid cuts. That's, you know, a very, very important thing that all SLPs should be listening out for, whether, you know, I'm not stating a bipartisan issue here. I'm not saying vote this way, vote that way. Just look at the individual you're voting for and find out their opinion on Medicare and Medicaid.
Oh, and it works. In Kentucky, Matt Bevin, the governor, was going to cut Medicaid services for dental, vision, and non-emergency transport services that was going to cut it off for about 400,000 people in the state. And enough people wrote in, called, and got angry that he says that, quote, the article out of the Courier-Journal says, in a surprise reversal, Kentucky officials have announced the state will rescind those Medicaid cuts. So it does work. It just takes a lot of people and a lot of social media awareness. And maybe exactly. Even, I hate to say it, but like, would even a guerrilla campaign type thing where next time you're in a nursing home and there's a staff member not being nowhere being around and there's a patient yelling down the hall, do we videotape it and push it on social media?
Wow.
I mean, like, instantly, that's what my heart, excuse me, I'm going to like take a cough break. But no, that's like exactly where my brain goes when I look at like social media and like the formal journalists. I would, you know, part of me wants to rip out my phone and just videotape in the hallway the patient just sitting there, not going anywhere, not doing anything, and then send it to the news. Instead, I do my job and I report it to the right managerial positions and they get taken care of and the patient gets returned to their home. But you know as well as I do that that's not going to make a difference.
That's certainly one way to do it. Let's call
as I get fired from all my home care positions. Yes.
Let's call it the Matt Hot Initiative.
No, let's not use my name there. In the initiative. Let's
put
call
people
it.
People in the hot seat. Let's do Matt. That.
Go out there and get your, you know, have that camera app open.
Yeah.
And get out there and do what Matt Hot told you to do.
But you know what though? I mean, it would get change. It would get changed very quickly if they saw, you know.
I think there's a lot of politicians out there that do not care at all.
No, they don't.
At all. They would see that video and say, I don't care.
Well, and we're looking at, you know, people don't think about these populations until, just like you said, Mike, that our first two articles are talking about populations that are on the fringe of what most people know. You know, as SLPs, we work with these communities, but until people have a family member or a niece or nephew who has autism or is watching their parent deal with trying to find a nursing home that's actually really taking good care of their parent when they're elderly or their grandparent, people don't pay attention to it.
Well, this is depressing. If you have an idea, head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. Email us, contact@speechscience.org, or phone call 503-345-6740. In something that is changing, regular straws are going away because evidently we put 8 million straws into the ocean. So what's that got to do with speech science? According to NPR, why people with disabilities want bans on plastic straws to be more flexible. Get it? Flexible with the straws. But no, like if you have a no straw policy or you're supposed to use a glass straw or an aluminum straw or a biodegradable straw, that doesn't help anyone that maybe needs to use a chin tuck or maybe can't bring a cup to their face. All of a sudden now you're creating problems for someone that has gone to Starbucks their whole life, uses, you can maneuver in their wheelchair, get their Frappa, mocha, chocolata, Cheeto, something to go. I don't know Starbucks. Sits and drinks it out of their straw.
A really now, long order and get their drink.
And now they can't.
Well, I thought this article was interesting because we keep seeing it popping up in social media and the news about the straws and companies like Starbucks and other places saying by this year, by this date, we will have gotten rid of all plastic straws. And instead replace them with things that look like adult sippy cups. But point being that the article makes a good point that we have people with dysphagia or people who need a bendy straw in order to participate in that meal or participate in that social activity with and nutritional activity with their families or out in public. And maybe keeping a reserve of some of those straws is important, or looking at, I don't know, reusable straws, or what are the, like you said, the biodegradable ones or the paper.
They're made of cardboard.
Cardboardy straws. You can only use those for half of a drink approximately before they get a little soggy, depending on which one it is. But I don't know. I feel like there's other options than just no straws at all. You know, okay. If we're not going to do plastic, what do we have? And if there's people who really need it, then what do we do for them?
Yeah, obviously straws are going to need to be available for individuals with disabilities. You know, I think it's great that straws are being cut back for in terms of, you know, garbage and how much we're throwing away all the time. I know there's a big cutback on styrofoam cups, getting rid of that. Garbage and things that are not biodegradable or recyclable, cutting back on those things is a very important thing with the amount of waste we create, you know, daily. So I think this is an important initiative, but individuals with disabilities are going to need these plastic straws. So in terms of overall production, they're going to need to be still be created and provided for these individuals who need them.
You know, and I'm going to take the other side of this, and I really apologize if I alienate anybody.
Go for it, Matt.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. The straw ban, like I'm trying to find stuff, and it says that it takes up about 4% of the waste or pollution in the oceans is the plastic straws. Like, there is a ton of things that we need to fix as a society when we look at environmental concerns that I could look at, you know, the smog produced by the cars or not using renewable sources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Before we get down to, I need to ban straws because people are throwing them onto the road. Here's, like, this hit way closer to home than I really thought it would until I was thinking about it. Disney World. I take my kids to Disney World. At Animal Kingdom, they have no straws because they're
because of the animals.
If you've never given a three-year-old a drink, because they also don't have lids at Disney World because there's plastic in them, and they give you a biodegradable cup at Disney World and you give it to a three-year-old, the odds of everything in that cup not ending up on the ground or on your three-year-old, very slim. And like, and so like, I get why they are banning straws. Like, you don't want the picture of the goose with the straw being ripped out of its throat. Like, you don't want that. And I get that. But like, there are so many other things that we could do to, I don't know, address the other 96% of stuff floating in the ocean other than straws. I was just reading in one of these articles, I just found a different article that McDonald's is looking at getting rid of their straws. I'm not going to give my 5-year-old a sippy cup into the back seat that doesn't have like a well-fitting lid because he's 5 and he's going to squeeze it onto himself. Or now if I have a patient who can't go to McDonald's and get their sweet tea because McDonald's went to a sippy. I'm all over the place. This is dumb. I'm sorry.
Well, hey, Matt, but your kid using the straw sippy cup is a reusable straw, right?
Well, no, not if he goes to Starbucks and gets...
Sorry, I didn't know you were buying your
Starbucks. I was on a paradigm there that, like, but no, it's just, I don't know. I feel like, I don't even know. Everyone hates me. contact@speedscience.org. Send your hate mail there. But, like, no, I get why we're doing it, but I feel like this is such a stupid thing to have our people...
I have a question.
I'm going to mute myself. You guys go...
You just don't care about fish, man. That's the deal. You just don't care about fish. You just want to eat them.
Yes. Yes. Fish are delicious.
I agree with you. Fish are delicious. I don't want straws in them. Hey, I have a question.
This is the weirdest straw wrapper I've ever had.
Why did this just suddenly come up? What was the precipitating event to this being in the news all of the last month?
There was, did you read about this, Michael?
Probably not.
There was like some like project or something that got on like a local news media, like a kid's science project. And then it like got viral and then that's just how it blew up.
Was this your kid?
No. want to ban straws? Get out of here with that.
He's got McDonald's and Starbucks based on a kid's science fair project. That's pretty.
But yeah, like, I don't know. I get the point. It just, to me, there's so many other things that we should be fighting for. Like, as
like
a
what? Like what?
Okay.
Listen.
Okay. I feel like I'm going to get hate mail now from both sides because, like, hey, maybe we should, like, look at renewable energies that maybe will help keep the oceans clean. Maybe
Matt Hott at SpeedScience.org.
No, just Matt at SpeedScience.org. Even easier. Maybe we should look at funding, I don't know, long-term facilities for people with severe autism or elderly citizens instead of a nursing home with 200 residents and one nurse aide. I don't know. Maybe we should, like, I don't know.
Well done
farming that, like, helps renew itself without pesticides. I don't know, but, like, I feel like straws are way down there, but they're easy to, like, figure out because it's like, oh, I don't know how to make the world go on green to get rid of gas. I don't know how to make us stop using coal because I like my house being warm, but I could say I'm not going to use a straw. And I just feel like that's...
Are you saying there's a conspiracy against straws?
I'm saying there's a deep state analysis.
There were two shooters.
Yeah,
the straws.
And there were some email servers stolen from the straw manufacturers, and that's all I'm going to say.
That's what it is. It's the Russians.
This is why my friends that are really far left think I'm a crazy person on the right, and my friends that are on the right think I'm a crazy person on the left, because I'm somewhere in the middle and I'm a crazy person.
You argue both sides, yeah. So
I'm taking a recluse for just a second. Straws, don't ban them.
Just a straw-loving centrist you are.
Yes, I am. I like a straw, man. My five-year-old likes a straw. We put them in, like, the recycling bin when we're done. We don't, like, throw them onto the road.
I'm surprised that this discussion hasn't also touched on plastic utensils and everything else that we
discussed. Wait, do they want to ban plastic utensils?
I don't know. I'm saying I'm surprised that that hasn't come up.
Hold on. Plastic utensils.
Oh, man. Now we're videotaping people in SNFs. Now we're banning plastic utensils.
Seattle.
Look what we're doing here, man.
Seattle has banned plastic straws and utensils.
Unless they're biodegradable, right?
Let's see. Would you like to use your cardboard fork?
Hey, no, they make biodegradable plastic things. Plastic-like forks.
Oh, so instead of, okay, they will have reusable, compostable utensils, straws, and cocktail picks. All right.
Oh, there you go. Compostable. But
now, like, even going back to our patients with dysphagia, everyone that was listening is like, this has nothing to do with speed. it's so dumb because, like, you fight so hard to either tell a patient, don't use a straw or use a straw. Here's a dysphagia straw. Are you guys familiar with the dysphagia straw?
Yes.
It's got, like, the little silver bullet that allows only, like, 1 ounce of liquid. And you're
it moderates the amount. Okay.
Hey, can't use it anymore because it needs a plastic straw to be put into it. Can't put a biodegradable straw into it because it's not made for that. Now, my patient that's had a stroke that has to have 1 ounce of liquid or less has to be fishing his dysphagia bullet out of his McDonald's sweet tea because we're afraid of the guy down the street throwing a straw out and a turtle eating it. I don't know. This just makes me irrationally upset over no reason.
Matt, you're killing me right now.
What if that straw has some secret ooze in it and a turtle eats it?
Oh my gosh. All right. Head to our website. Tell me why I'm wrong. Podcast.speechscience.org. Email contact@speechscience.org or phone call 503-345-6740. When we come back around the bend, I do have something that's a little bit more upbringing or uplifting than sea turtles eating straws. You're listening to Speech Science.
Hey everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over, until one day I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, "I do," but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
This last group of customers can't believe their ears.
Can I start you with something to drink first, ladies?
Are you nervous?
I stutter sometimes.
So why do you work as a waiter?
I can do my job.
This woman right here is just really upset.
Can you just stop talking and write? It really annoys me.
They also decide to alert the management.
These girls are being very rude.
Why? What do they say?
They're being obnoxious with this young man. And he's doing a great job.
But that doesn't deter our bullies.
Well, clearly it's not good enough, so can you just like get us another waiter, please? We're really in a rush.
Don't be so rude, girls.
Exactly.
Maybe you shouldn't work as a waiter.
Not gonna work. Go someplace else if you don't like it here.
With our manager failing to act quickly.
Why did you hire someone that can't even
talk? Oh, will you stop it? Yes,
they've all had enough.
Things are getting a little hairy here.
Get out!
And this woman takes matters into her own hands.
Get out! You are rude and obnoxious, and you don't deserve to deal with this young man.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Let's bring it.
Yes! Get out!
Thank you.
You don't have the courage? I'll kick their asses out. Get you.
Good.
Get you.
I've got it.
Get your ass out.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Welcome back to Speed Science. That was a clip from What Would You Do that aired this weekend with John Quiñones on ABC. And if you're not familiar with What Would You Do, it's basically a hidden camera show where they put people in a social situation and see what average people would do. That was a part of the clip called The King's Speech, which obviously the waiter had a disfluency, and the two actresses were berating him, as you heard in the clip. And I can honestly say in the 7 or 8 minute clip, every single person in the restaurant spoke up for our dude with disfluency. So, yay, uplifting news.
Yeah, that doesn't always happen on that show.
No, it does not. They had a couple things with The Sandlot, which was a kid that wanted to like trade a baseball that was signed. One was called Billy Elliot because it was the mom wanted the kid to play sports and he wanted to be a ballerina dancer. And one was called Spanglish because the mom, they based it all on movies this weekend. The mom mm-hmm. wanted the daughter to lose a bunch of weight to fit into a dress instead of buying a dress that fits her. But Oh, and then Boys Don't Cry because they had a transgender transgender man that the people that knew him when she was a she were making fun of him on a date. I love What Would You Do? And I figured that was a good way to end because it actually had something to do with speech therapy and people were speaking up for our former students or people in the world. You know what though? I don't have the guts. I don't think I would say something in a restaurant. I feel like I'm spineless.
I would.
Would you?
Yes.
Would you kick him out of the restaurant like that lady did?
No.
I like that. No. I mean, if you Google that or check YouTube for the clip that Matt's talking about, though, a lot of it are elderly.
Yeah.
Older generation who were all standing up saying, knock it off.
I like that. If you don't have the guts, I'll kick their ass out. All right, I'm going to have that in the show notes. All right, let's wrap this up. We've got, 4 minutes before we all got to get out of here? We'll start with the least amount of babies. Michael, what are you doing this week?
Pretty much the same old thing. Back from Maryland and preparing for, wrapping things up for the month of July with some of my clients. And pretty much the same old stuff. Just working hard in the summertime. You know how it is.
Awesome. Michelle.
I am moving to Kentucky. Yep, we are moving, as you guys know, military family. So that's taken us to the good old state of Kentucky with a 3-week-old.
It'll be fine. Just don't let them grow up with an accent.
Oh.
Baby speech science.
There's a little bit of that just in Cincinnati where you are.
I know. Okay. I have family from Tennessee and Kentucky, so I hear the accent all day.
And hopefully we have listeners there. Our southern listeners, please write in.
I love the southern accent. I really do. I just can't do it very good anymore. For me, this week, I've just got more home health care. And then, I'm going golfing Friday.
Nice.
At a Jack Nicklaus designed golf course here in Mason, Ohio. So it's where the senior PGA used to play. So,
golfing for straws.
Just don't ban straws. Anyway, all right. Our music this week, our opening music is Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our bump music today was The Temperature of the Air on the Bow of the Calatian by Chris Zabrinsky. It's licensed under an attribution license. And our closing music tonight, it's called Slow Burn by Kevin MacLeod. It's licensed under a Creative Commons attribution license. For Michelle Wintering and Baby Speech Science, Michael Cloud, and I'm Matt Hott with two not baby, but after baby speech science. I don't know. Michael and Andrew are 1 and 5 and keeping up all night. Peace out, y'all. See you next week. Love you. Bye.
Nice podcast. Welcome back.